Hello, and welcome to the eighth podcast in the ONFIF focus series on globalization. In this week's episode, we ask how technological advancement is affecting the global labor force and examine the impact of automation and other technologies on productivity, labor efficiency, and employment, the prospects for rising technological unemployment, and the role of policymakers. My name is Oliver Thew, Programs Manager at ONFIF, and I'm pleased to be joined by Stein Brücker, Senior Economist at the Employment, Labor, and Social Affairs Directorate of the OECD. Stein leads the Future of Work initiative at the OECD and is part of the team revising the OECD job strategy. Prior to joining the OECD, Stein worked for African Development Bank, as well as for the UK and Mozambique Civil Service. Stein, welcome.
Hello.
For decades, technological movements have benefited individuals and economies across the globe. One of the effects of technological advancement is the manner by which it continues to modify the labour market. However, questions are being asked about the benefits that will come with the latest wave of technological progress, what some have called the fourth industrial revolution, including developments in automation, robotics, artificial intelligence, computer software, and algorithms. Stein, a couple of questions on this point. What do you see as the main opportunities or benefits with regards to productivity, labor efficiency, employment, and economic growth from this latest wave of technological advancements?
Well, whether it's the latest technological advancements or ones we've seen in the past, we know that innovation brings opportunities for doing things more efficiently, for increasing productivity. In all likelihood, the prices of goods is going to fall, their quality rise, and all else we equal, I think these technologies should benefit basically everybody, should make everybody better off. But the problem is that in practice, there are likely to be winners as well as losers from these technological changes. Some people are likely to lose their jobs as demand for the products or services decline. Other people will, of course, see their more job opportunities or better job opportunities, their wages rise.
Do you think that there is a way that these benefits can be equally distributed, both, say, within a country nationally and internationally?
Of course, it's possible. One of the problems is whether we actually manage to do this. If you look at OECD countries over the past half century, say, inequality is at its highest level that it's been for 50 years, and in many countries it keeps on rising. If you look at, say, the richest 10% of people, they earn about 9 times more than the poorest 10% of people. Now, there's a lot we can do about inequality. We know what works and what doesn't and how inequality should be tackled. I mean, one of the key issues in going back to technological change is skills. We need to make sure that everybody has the skills to, first of all, make a good start in the labor market, but second, also make sure that people who are displaced then have the skills to find another job where there is a rise in demand. We need to make sure that people have access to good quality jobs. I mean, it's just not any job that will do. We need to ensure that the labor market is not segmented into good quality jobs on the one hand, protected jobs, long-term jobs, and then very temporary jobs, poorly paid jobs on the other hand, and there's things we can do on that side as well. The other thing we know that works in terms of tackling inequality and the results of, say, technological change and the winners and losers is tax and transfer systems. The problem is that in recent decades, I think OECD countries, many of them, have become less good at redistributing. The final thing I would say is that, I mean, we know there's some groups fewer opportunities than others. I'm thinking about women, but also about ethnic minorities. And again, we know quite a lot about what we can do to make sure that these people have good labor market outcomes.
Thank you, Stein. You've already alluded to this reality, which is that the benefits often differ depending on the country, the economy, levels within the workforce, as you pointed out, perhaps even depending on people are of minorities or women. Do you think that the benefits of this sort of latest wave of technological advancements and advancements that are still to come will differ depending on the industry and sectors? Perhaps you could explain a bit more about that.
Yes, I think there are definitely some industries, some sectors, some occupations which are more likely to be affected than others. What we know from recent research is what's particularly at risk is tasks that are routine, so things that can be easily programmed by computers and by algorithms. So, I mean, of course, everybody talks about manufacturing and the rise of robots, but there are perhaps other sectors which people talk about a little bit less, like sales and retail, perhaps also some financial sectors or parts of the financial sector, which are also at risk of automation. As long as, I think the key word here is the routine word. Another side of this is that some regions will be more affected by this than others, depending upon where the concentration is of industry and occupations, and also perhaps certain countries may be more affected than others. To give you an example, I mean, we know that both on distant but also the recent past is that technological change, if it's not managed properly, can really create havoc in local communities. I mean, if you look at the adoption of robots, for example, there was a recent paper in the United States which showed that areas where there was a high adoption of robots, there was also higher unemployment as a result. Now, this was a paper for the United States. There was a similar paper for Germany, which didn't find this. The arguments they brought forward as to why that might be is because decisions on how these technologies were adopted were discussed more through social dialogue. So I think we can have an important impact on how technologies are adopted by discussing what we want the future to look like.
Thank you, Stein. Yes, you've touched on something that we'll come to shortly with this issue of increasing automation or robots and unemployment and how to address those issues. You mentioned just briefly then as well the financial services sector. I wonder if you could just elaborate slightly. I mean, what do you consider there'll be the benefits with regards to this technology for the financial services sector?
I presume, just like in any other sector, there are certain tasks of what people do at work which are routine, which are the kind of things that take a lot of time, but that you need to do nonetheless to be able to do the job. I think one of the promising aspects of technology is that these things can be automated. It means that we have more time and resource to do other things on top of that. So in many ways, I think technological change will be labor augmenting. So it will complement our skills and make us more productive. So there's no doubt that there must be certain parts of the financial sector, like document review or whatever, that can be automated. What I think is very unlikely is that there's entire jobs in the financial sector which will be automated, or at least very few of them. I mean, every job consists of a certain number of tasks. Some of these tasks we will be able to automate, others not. And my prediction is that the tasks that will be automated in those jobs, people will readjust what they do on the job. I mean, just to give you an interesting example, which I guess is kind of related to the financial sector, it's when we saw the rollout of ATM machines across the United States, one would expect that bank tellers would have been pushed out of employment and there would be huge reductions in the number of bank tellers or clerks. And in fact, we saw the opposite. We saw that as ATMs were rolled out across the country, we saw an increase in bank tellers. It's just that the kind of jobs they did were different. It increased the productivity of people. It freed up time for them to do value-added activities, more customer-facing activities.
Yes, certainly. And it's quite interesting that you've brought this up, the idea that perhaps if jobs don't disappear, they will be augmented. One potential benefit is that as this technology takes over a sort of routine and repetitive aspects of work, it'll allow for humans to focus on more creative and rewarding aspects, as well as learn new tasks and skills. According to some research, less than 5% of jobs globally could be fully automated, but up to 60% of all occupations could have around a third of their individual tasks automated. So you've already mentioned this slightly, but I thought, what were your thoughts on this increasing automation of jobs? And do you see this maybe as more applicable for higher skilled workers in developed economies, or will this in fact have an impact around the world in emerging markets and other lower skilled jobs?
Right. So there are many estimates of this risk of automation. I mean, some are very pessimistic. Some believe that 50% of jobs could be automated. You cited a figure of 5%. We at the OECD, our latest estimates suggest that around 14% of jobs are at high risk of automation. I think the key point about these estimates is that a relatively low share of jobs are at high risk of automation, I mean, of being fully automated. But like you said, a large share of jobs will undergo significant change and people will have to adapt on the job. Whether this will affect high-skilled workers, more developed economies more? No, I think the opposite. I mean, what is new about this wave of technological change is that it's not restricted to a particular occupation, a particular sector. It's not just blue-collar workers, it's also white-collar workers. It's pervasive, it affects everybody. I mean, from radiologists to people in the financial sector, to the legal profession. Despite this, I think low-skilled people are still, or have been in the past and will be in the future, those who will be most affected by the changes that lie ahead. They're the people who will most likely see their jobs taken away, they're the people who will have most difficulty adjusting on the job. And again, when that job changes, they'll have most difficulty finding new jobs when they arise. And as a result of this, I think also, I mean, developed economies might suffer to some extent. I mean, we've seen this in the past, but I think the risk of automation is much higher still in emerging economies and some developing economies, which have much larger manufacturing sectors and the kinds of occupations which could still be automated.
Thank you, Stein. I mean, this concern is that technology and automation will have an adverse effect on the labour market, specifically what people call technological unemployment. It's a study by researchers at the University of Oxford predicts that 35% of all UK occupations could be automated in the next two decades. The Bank of England said it could be closer to 50%, whilst I think your own organisation, the OECD, is suggesting in the UK it could be closer to 10%. What do you think this potential impact of technological unemployment will be for the UK, but also similarly for the global labour force?
Yeah, let me first of all say that these high rates of technological unemployment are very unlikely. I mean, let alone the 50%. I think even when you talk about a figure of 14%, which we now are our latest estimates, I mean, for the UK, I don't know exactly what the figure is, but it must be between 9 to 14% or so. Even then, we need to be careful. It's not because something is technically possible to automate that it will actually be automated. There are many reasons why in practice this won't happen. There was a recent survey by the European Commission of people in Europe, and they asked people in the street how they felt about the use of robots in various aspects of life. So people felt happy with the use of robots in space exploration or in the military. They didn't feel so happy about using robots to look after their children or to look after themselves if they were sick. So just to say that there are social reasons, ethical reasons why adoption of robots or technology may not happen. There are legal constraints. And also, it's not because something is technically possible that it makes business sense for firms to adopt that technology. So that figure that, or those figures that we've cited need to be put into perspective. And the other point, of course, that we need to make is that technology doesn't just automate jobs. I mean, all these estimates are always about what the percentage of jobs could be automated. That's the easy bit. The difficult bit is to predict what new jobs will arise. And we know from the past, and even now, we know that there are plenty of new jobs arising, like big data specialists, Internet of Things architects, social media managers, all kinds of jobs which didn't exist 10 years ago. Also, because technology makes goods cheaper and services cheaper, demand increases, and as a result of that, there's an increased demand for labor as well. These figures need to be taken with a pinch of salt to some extent. It's not because something, as I said, technically possible that it will actually happen. And certainly when we look, and this includes the UK, if we look over the last couple of decades, if you look at employment rates, they've been rising in most OECD countries. Of course, whether that will continue or not, that is a big question.
It's a good point that you've raised. Just because if something is possible doesn't mean it will actually be implemented. I think that is a healthy dose of realism in terms of these figures and stats that come out. If we did have to discuss it, though, you know, this idea that people will become technologically unemployed because of automation, and then obviously they will create the rise for new jobs. And so if this was to become, let's say, as you said, 9 to 14% of the UK occupations that could be automated, what sort of time scale are we talking with that? Is this something over the next 10 years, 20 years, 50 years?
This is something very difficult to answer. I read somewhere, which I thought was a very wise piece of advice, is that we should probably refrain from trying to think about what kind of jobs could be automated technically, because, you know, we've always been wrong in the past. We've always said some things can't be automated, and in the end they are. And we need to have more discussion about what jobs do we want to be automated. So it's about social preferences. The kind of factors that I've mentioned to you previously will put a brake on how rapidly these changes will occur. On the other hand, I do think that technological change is advancing very rapidly, and the world today is not the same as the world 10 years ago. So generally, when we talk about these estimates, people are talking about the next 10 to 20 years.
Thank you. Yes. And again, a good dose of realism there. I like that idea, though, that in terms of thinking about technology and automation, it's where would we want to see this increased automation, which I assume would then bring, obviously, increased productivity and efficiency. From your own research, the OECD, where are the sort of key areas that you think in terms of automating jobs, or over the past few years, where do you think there has been the largest sort of increase in terms of investment or, you know, actual change in automation?
We've seen the greatest automation in the past. I mean, again, Where automation happens is a mixture of what is technically possible and what we want as a society. Where we have seen it happen in the past is in occupations that can be routine and that can be automated. I mean, sometimes things have been offshored in the past. I mean, I think the link between technological change and globalization is quite close. I mean, on the one hand, technological change also allows the offshoring. Everywhere where it makes business sense to either automate things or use technology to offshore things, this is where we've seen things happen in the past. And this is what we've seen over the last, say, 10 to 15 years in most OECD countries, if not all, is that the share of these routine jobs, these middle skill jobs in OECD countries has been declining. And so you've seen those disappear as a share of the total, but you've seen an increase in high skill jobs primarily. And in some countries, also some increase in the low-skilled jobs. So we've seen this polarization of the labor market. Whether this will continue in the next 10 to 20 years, that's a very difficult question to answer.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Stein. Just going back then quickly to technological unemployment. As you said, I think you've mentioned that perhaps this risk is overstated sometimes, because although it may be possible, doesn't mean it will practically be implemented for various reasons. But what would be the main economic, social, political implications of, say, rising technological unemployment?
Yeah, I mean, if I may, I'd like maybe to rephrase that question slightly. Whether or not technological unemployment is likely to happen, what we do see is a very serious reallocation of labor. We see an increase in demand for certain occupations, certain jobs, and a decline in others. What we're seeing is primarily an increase in demand for high-skilled workers, which means that there's a certain section of society, the low-skilled workers, who are falling behind. So whether you're talking about this polarization, as I've just mentioned, or technological employment, I think it's that section of the workforce of society that we need to worry about. There was a publication by the OECD a couple of weeks ago, which looked at the survey of adult skills. So the OECD survey of adult skills looked at adults in a number of OECD countries and tested them, just like the PISA tests, tested them on numeracy, on literacy, and also on problem-solving skills. And so this piece of research, what it did, it looked at the numeracy and literacy questions which were asked as part of this survey, and it asked a panel of experts whether or not these, you know, artificial intelligence could answer these questions. So the good news that came out of this research is that there are many tasks which artificial intelligence can't do yet. But the bad news was that most people can't do them either. So there are actually only around 11% of people who could do the kind of tasks in literacy and numeracy, which artificial intelligence can't yet do. Skills policies are obviously important. We need to make sure that people have the skills to get those jobs, the high-skilled jobs. But we also know, I mean, we know that many people lack these basic skills. And my concern is that skills policies, while very important, will have their limits, and we're not sure that we will be able to upskill the kind of programs that we have to the extent that we might need to. I guess this is where some of the other discussions come in, is if we cannot make sure that these people get the new jobs that arise, what do we do with them? What does that mean for social protection?
Yeah, thank you. And that brings us on nicely, I mean, to the role really of sort of policymakers, because clearly, whether it's increasing sort of polarization or if there is some sort of technological unemployment, it will require policymakers to have a sort of concerted effort to address these. You've mentioned this idea of really increasing training or education, upskilling workforces. Do you think that there is enough sort of focus, research, and actual policy on this area at the moment, or is there sort of room to progress? And more so, is this something that not only should be done on a national level, but that needs sort of international cooperation?
Right, so some good questions there. There's obviously a role for skills policies. I mean, in many countries, we still fail many people coming out of initial education. Young people come out of school not having the skills to get a good job straight away. And there are many inequalities in the education system which we need to tackle. We know also that we can do better with apprenticeships and vocational education for some groups, which give them skills which are directly applicable in the labor market. But I think the other aspect of policy which will become more and more important is the lifelong learning aspect. Most of the people who will be affected by all these changes that we're discussing are people who are already in the labor market. They will need to learn new skills. And so they will need incentives, they will need opportunities throughout their working lives to either maintain their skills, upskill, or even reskill. I think this is where we need significant upscaling of what we have right now. Talking about policy more generally, I think skills are important. Social dialogue is important in all this. We need to have a discussion about what technologies we want to adopt, how we adopt them, and what is necessary for the adoption. And social partners can play a very important role in terms of identifying, again, going back to the skills, what skills are required, design the programs that are needed to teach people those skills, and then implement. Talk about the geographical aspect. I think there are many of these policies should have a regional aspect, I mean, a local aspect. I think many of the changes we're seeing are happening at a local level, and what's happening in one region is not the same as in another region. And so there should be flexibility at the local level to adjust these policies, to identify skills needs and tackle them. But there are obviously some things on the international level as well. The rise of the potential rise of protectionism, which is a risk. But the other point to make, of course, is that we have this platform economy, which is emerging and which has been facilitated by technological change. And there we really have an issue with workers working all over the world for firms or customers all over the world. And it's not clear what jurisdiction applies to these workers. And again, there, I think, obviously, space for international cooperation.
Well, as robots take on, or automation takes on more tasks, there could be this growing case for a universal basic income where everyone receives sort of state benefits, which may sort of offset some of the negative impacts. Does this concept of a universal basic income provide an adequate solution to mitigate the social effects of job losses? Or again, is it really going back to this idea of upskilling and lifelong learning that may provide a better solution or mitigate the negative impact that would be felt from increasing automation?
Yeah, and just to repeat, I'm not sure that technological unemployment or massive technological unemployment is a real risk. So maybe that argument for the basic income is perhaps a little weaker. Let's assume that it's a possibility for the sake of argument. But another reason why maybe a basic income could be considered is because we have this rise in the platform economy. It's still small at the moment, but it is increasing quickly. We have new forms of work emerging. And many of these workers are less well protected by existing social protection mechanisms. And so that would be another potential reason for considering a basic income. Now, there are many variations of this basic income. At the OECD, we've done some research into what this might look like. And there are some advantages, obviously, to having a basic income. It makes the system much simpler. It makes sure everybody is covered, so that nobody falls through the cracks. But we also realize there are some significant challenges policymakers will face if they are considering implementing a basic income. The most obvious of these challenges is, of course, the cost of it. I mean, our simulations, and again, I stress it's just one simulation amongst many, but our simulations suggest that if you want a basic income at any reasonable level so that people, you know, are not in poverty, this would cost a lot of money. If you took all spending on social protection at the moment in OECD countries and redistributed it equally as a basic income, you would have a basic income which is considerably below poverty levels. And so that means that if you want a meaningful basic income, you would have to significantly increase taxes. The other point to make, or that came out of our research, is that implementing a basic income will lead to some winners and some losers. There are some people, like couples without children, who stand to gain, but there are other people, single parents, who stand to lose a lot from this. And so this is another one of the issues you would have to manage with a basic income. I think the final point with a basic income is that, yes, if people lose their jobs, you may be able to give them an income, but jobs are so much more than just income. They're also the satisfaction of working. And so this is where people are perhaps talking about some other schemes like job guarantees or a job offer. So these are also being discussed. I think it's very useful to have these discussions because it makes us think about the possibilities. It's good that some countries like Finland, Canada, the Netherlands are experimenting with basic income and other schemes so that we can learn from these things and how they work in practice. And I think this is very important going forward.
Lastly, what do you think will be the sort of key developments over the year? Are there going to be a specific type of technology or a sector where we'll see a development? Or is it going to be more of the same gradual changes? And again, this sort of approach to taking research in and looking at where the policy responses may be needed?
I don't think we're going to see any seismic shifts over the next year. I mean, like you say, it's most likely to be a gradual shift. What I believe will happen over the next year is that we will improve our understanding of what's happening, and that will lead to better policy making. I think we're understanding much more about what sectors, what occupations, what kind of individuals are being affected by these changes, which teaches us something about where our policies should be targeted. We're also learning a lot more about this platform economy, which is emerging, who these workers are, what they do, and we're learning about the regulation that should develop to provide a framework for this platform economy to function. I think many of these developments have kind of occurred at the fringes of our existing regulation, but I think over the next year we'll understand these things much better, and policymakers will start making the necessary changes so that flexibility is maintained, because flexibility is important, but also that we don't, you know, want flexibility for doesn't come at the expense of job security and job quality, and that we basically have decent or good jobs for everybody.
Thank you very much, Stan. That is a great point to leave on this conversation. I think this was truly fascinating. We've covered quite a variant of topics and issues. I think the risk of technological unemployment, as you said, maybe I've sort of, or as you said, overstated a little bit, but this gradual change is important to keep watch of. Obviously, as you said, hopefully more education and understanding over the coming year, which will help influence policy decisions. I'd like to thank you so much for participating in this.
No, thank you. It was fun.
Next week's episode in the Globalization series will focus on the economics of the refugee crisis, labor flows across Europe, and the immigration debate. This will be available on the OM5 channel next Tuesday, so you can download it once it's been broadcast or subscribe to our channel. If you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review.